The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PLAEUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 139. Got a great guest for you today. Mike Buehle is the strength coach for the Georgia Tech basketball program, and we first met a couple years back. He had a great nutrition. He gave a presentation, has a product, NutriCarina, that does some online nutrition education for strength coaches, and I thought it was a fantastic deal and did a great job with it. We've used that. We've used it with our athletes, and really good, cool thing to check out. We'll make sure to link that up, but wanted to have him on the show. He had just presented at San Antonio at the NSCA Coaches Conference on dynamic warm-up movement assessment that he does with his athletes. And, you know, as it's been said on the show a couple times, you know, a lot of people use their warm-up as an assessment tool, and he's been able to, he created a DVD a couple years back and turned it into an online program that is launching this week. And just before I forget, he has given $25 off for any Iron Game Chalk Talk listener as well. You just got to go to www.dynamicwarmupmovementscreen.com/IGCT. And during the launch week, which is the week that this episode comes out, I think they're giving $50 off the normal price and then $25 off of that for any Iron Game Chalk Talk listener. So I'd make sure to check that out if you're interested. But I wanted to have him on the show. He did a great job at his presentation at the conference. And so we dived into that. We talked quite a bit about how he uses that with his athletes, and he's integrated it, and where the origins of it had come from, and just a great conversation. And again, as we talk quite a bit about on the show, being a strength coach, a successful strength coach, being all a technician, a manager, and an entrepreneur, and Mike does a great job doing all three of those. And so I know you're going to get a ton out of this episode. Before we do, I want to make sure we recognize our sponsor for this episode, Ignition APG. They are in full force with their combine prep program, and they're one of the best. They do a fantastic job, and like I said, if you're following them on social media, then you're seeing all the different things that they have coming out. I think today I was just seeing that they were training a couple of the WNBA player of the year and some things along those lines, but just a fantastic company. But they have a speed system certification that they put on in April. They do some on-site certifications as well, so if you're looking for, as a staff, you're looking for a continuing ed or just some advanced education in the topic of speed, they do a great job of it. I'm certified through them, like many others, and I couldn't recommend it enough. But check them out. Go to ignitionapg.com. Check out not just their certification, but the different products that they have, and just a company that does it the right way, mind, body, and spirit, all the way around. So can't say enough great things about Ignition. So check them out. Want to get to this episode. Know you're really going to enjoy it. We'll see you on the other side. All right, guys. Excited to have Mike Buehle with us. Mike is strength coach for basketball at Georgia Tech. And, you know, I've got a chance to get to know him over the last couple of years. And when I, you know, you guys, you know, with my book, you know, talking about the technician, the manager, and entrepreneur, what I've really, really enjoyed getting to know about Mike is he's a fantastic technician. He's a great manager. Has to manage lots of different people, but he's got a very entrepreneurial type of spirit, like I do. And he's found different ways to make his situation at Tech much better by thinking entrepreneurially within the program. And so he's gone out and created solutions to problems that he's found, and then turn around and found ways to create some additional revenue streams as well. So, man, I appreciate you being on the show, bud.
Coach, thank you, man. I watch the show all the time. It's a real honor to be on the show. So a lot of great coaches. So I'm ecstatic to be here with you, man. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks a lot, buddy. Well, hey, let's jump into it, bud. You know, you got a unique journey. So tell us a little bit, you know, Reader's Digest version, how and why you got into strength and conditioning, and then kind of the path you took to get to Georgia Tech.
Yeah, you know, I never dreamed of being a strength conditioning coach. I didn't even really know that the profession existed. I started in 98. I was a club lacrosse, club soccer. Of course, we were the redheaded stepchildren in the athletic department. We played everybody in our conference, but we weren't NCAA sanctioned. So, once I figured out I wasn't going to – what's that?
What school was that?
Eastern Kentucky.
Okay, Eastern Kentucky.
Eastern Kentucky, yeah. So, once I figured out I wasn't going to be pro in either one of those things, I figured I better get myself in gear and start working towards my degree and really focusing on that. So, and around that time, Coach Curry was fired at University of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So I was working personal training at a local YMCA, and one of the graduate assistants, came there as an athletic or fitness director. And that's when I was opened up to the door of strength conditioning, really. He started teaching me, saw my passion for training and stuff, and learned all of this. And I spent about a year learning underneath him. About 6 months. And then his old assistant, Aaron Shelley, who was at University of Nevada out in Reno, contacted him and said, "Hey, listen, I need a graduate assistant. Get out here." He said, "Wait a minute, my wife's pregnant. Not going down that path again. I'm set." He said, "But I got a kid here. You need to check out."
Right.
And in fact, you saw at the show, Leanne Blinn,
yeah,
which was Cataldo at the time. She was an assistant with Aaron there, so that's how her and I kind of had a relationship before. So, first time they'd ever done a graduate assistantship at Nevada. And I did the interview, did three interviews actually, and didn't hear from Coach for about 4 months. So I thought, I didn't get it. And I actually got back from a job interview back down in Clearwater, Florida, at a private sports conditioning studio. And Coach actually called and said, "Hey, Mike, sorry it's taking so long. You want to do this?" And I said, "Absolutely." I said, "When do you need me out there?" He goes, "Yesterday." So college roommate, we jumped in the car, 2 18-hour drives straight out there, and that was it, man. I was hooked after the first day. I was like, this is what I wanted to do. So
that's awesome.
After that, I had an opportunity. Was there for 4 years, getting my master's, and then I got opportunity to was at a strength conditioning conference in SCA, and got to Georgia Southern. Had a backpack full of resumes and said, "Hey, I got a degree and I'm ready to go." So did an interview there, got the job, and then waited a couple of months before HR approved everything, and then I was out there. And then always kind of proud of myself on being a football guy. Thought I was going to be that, and just never really materialized. Opportunity for University of Dayton came open. I went up there and did an interview, and it was a pretty exhaustive interview. I was in the interview from 7:30 in the morning to 5:30 at night. Wow. And by the time I left there, I said, "Man, I really hope I get this job." And was fortunate enough to do that. That was 11 years ago, and I've been with Coach Gregory ever since. He and I got a great relationship. When he got the job at Georgia Tech, he took me and one other assistant with him. And it was at that point, you always kind of feel like you had a good relationship with him. But you know, when he takes you along with him, in that regard, you know, you knew it's something kind of special that way. So just been with him ever since. Never thought I'd be a basketball guy or really even get specialized. I think that's the one thing that I look back on in my graduate assistantship is Aaron always made sure that every athlete, every team that was on the floor, you as a graduate assistant had to be out there. At times it was just two graduate assistants out there. So I worked with tons of teams. I mean, I'm talking Alpine to Nordic Ski. Some teams that people won't even be able to hear up, boxing, everything. So I think that made me a really diverse coach.
Sure.
Feel comfortable teaching anybody. And really, I don't care if you're an underwater basket weaver. We're going to be awesome. We're going to be great at what the heck we do. And we're going to be the best and strongest with that. So those are the big things I take away as far as, obviously, as I've kind of moved through my career. And when we have interns like that, I try to tell them, say, "Hey, get involved with as many sports as possible as you can. It's only going to help help you as a coach and help build your resume.
No doubt. You know, and in that process, I mean, I would assume, just like we all have, one of the things I like to do on the show is to point out other people's mistakes, because I think that that helps avoid, you know, helps you avoid making those mistakes, you know, and if I can avoid those landmines, those tripwires, I think hopefully I can get to a place a little bit faster. And so what, you know, what do you think was the biggest mistake that you've made in that journey as a strength coach, and how did you learn from that?
Well, we could make a whole show of this. You know, one thing, I'll go down to kind of a list and I'll elaborate on maybe one or two. I think number one, I did a really poor job of networking in the very beginning, just getting outside my comfort zone and going up and introducing myself to coaches. I think that's one of the big things that that kids are trying to get involved in this process. You know, I'm sure you get calls all your day, how do I get started in this profession? Mm-hmm. So they go up and introduce yourself. Tell somebody that you're really passionate about it. So that's the one thing is once I got in there and did it, I just, when I go to conferences, I felt really intimidated and going out to introduce myself. I just kind of stayed within my circle of friends, circle of coaches that I felt comfortable with. And so that would be the one thing that I think I, if I could pass along a big piece of advice, is call up coaches. Talk to them. Not all of them will call you back because we're super busy, but the ones that do, I mean, those types of relationships, you'll make it unbelievable. And obviously being at conferences, really step outside your comfort zone, go up, talk to coaches, and just ask them, you know, what do you do at your program? And God gave you 2 ears and one mouth. Just listen and take it all in. I think the second thing is you can have the best strength program in the world, and I say that meaning that God himself could bestow you with the best strength conditioning program. But if it's poorly organized, and it's not going to work. And more importantly, I get calls all the time from coaches that say, what do you do at Tech, or what did you do at Dayton, or blah, blah, blah. And I think that's a coaching colors by number. That's a copycat. I have a smorgasbord of coaching influences, and I just find, I like that. I obviously have my hub, you know, my core beliefs that I believe, but there's almost like a hub of a wheel. There's spokes that kind of that poke out from there, and I take a lot of influences from a lot of smart coaches, a lot smarter coaches than I am, and find that way to fit within our program with our athletes. And the way I've trained athletes at Georgia Tech is completely different than the way the athletes that I trained at Dayton. So, I think the biggest piece is letting your athletes know that you care about them before letting them know what you do know. That's probably one of the biggest pieces of advice that I got. You know, I thought, you know, I put my nose in a book and learn all this and this and this and this. Well, yeah, theory's great, but you got to put it into practice. And I think over the years, the biggest reward for me is getting a group of men to believe in what you believe and follow you.
Right.
You know, follow along with that. I think I get more of a reward from that than actually the strength numbers. You know, I think the easiest thing in the world to do is to get somebody strong and make them tired. The question is, can you get them, make them better?
Right.
And more importantly, can you get a group of men to follow along with you and believe in what you believe to help them get better?
No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I went to the conference and during that award ceremony, I was talking about, 18 years ago, I was in that same conference, and I talked to one person in the entire conference. And so I would echo that. I mean, just get out and introduce yourself. I think the best thing you can do, and I tell people all the time, is to draw a 50-mile radius to where you're at and visit every single strength coach in that 50-mile radius, you know, because you never know. I mean, it could be the guy that's at, you know, whatever podunk you that you don't think would ever be able to help you. But that, you know, this is such a fraternity of coaches that, and they're some of the best ones at the smaller schools. And so getting out and meeting coaches and networking is critical. And you talked about principles. I mean, I'm a principle-based philosophy, principle-based strength coach, not a philosophy-based strength coach. And so, right. You know, having that hub like you talk about, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, how we kind of came to know each other and one of the things that really is unique about you and I think is inspiring is that, like I said, that entrepreneurial type of mindset, not so much from a standpoint of like, I'm going to go out and be a CEO type deal, but from finding creative solutions to problems that you found. You know, one of the problems that you found was nutrition with your athletes, you know, and so, you know, you started kind of addressing that issue, and then it kind of led to a product, Nutri-Carina, which we'll link up. But it's kind of an education program that you've put out there for coaches. And so, talk a little bit about the gap. Why did you feel that there was a need for you to get involved with nutrition as a strength coach, and then kind of what led to that becoming a product and a company for you?
Sure. Well, it actually started back when I was a graduate assistant. Aaron was a nutrition specialist in nutrition through International Sports Science Association, and I'd always had an affinity for nutrition. Looking at ways to enhance the work that I'm doing in the weight room and pairing and bridging that with the athletes. And that, once I got my certification of that, obviously I tried to take all that knowledge and pour it into my athletes.
Right.
And a couple of epiphanies along the way.
Drinking water through a fire hose, right?
Yeah. A couple of epiphanies is I'm super passionate about nutrition. My athletes aren't. They don't give a damn. And in fact, I actually ended up coming up, once I realized that, you know, I bring the kids in and talk to them about nutrition. I realized that they didn't need to know what I need to know. They just need to know essentials of nutrition.
Right.
Things that they can take that are really tangible and be able to go out and apply with it. And another epiphany for me was realizing that I control the environment in the weight room, and the coach controls the environment in the court or on the field. Reality is the athletes have to be making more informed, meaningful, and purposeful decisions about their health and nutrition when they're away from us. That's upwards of 20-plus hours. So they don't have that mindful or watchful eye in the weight room. We ain't getting it done. Guess what? We'll make sure we're getting it done right. We'll start over if we have to. Same way with the coaches. But nutrition, the guys are kind of on an island there. So I wanted to be able to figure out a way to empower them, make meaningful and purposeful connections as it relates to their health and performance goals. With that, started looking at millennials and a lot of the sciences out there, a lot of pedagogical, andragogical information that was out there, books. You know, I'm a huge, listen to books all the time. I'm not at the pace that you're at, man. You're an unbelievable. You're a machine. But trying to take that information from a business perspective and apply it to my coaching and then try to create something around that. So the one thing that we ended up figuring out is the athletes needed the education. No one wakes up in the morning and says, "Coach, I'm going to eat like crap today." No one says that. Right. No one has that demeanor. But the reality is they don't understand. And the perception oftentimes by the public and even sometimes even us as coaches is our kids are eating great. They'll eat great because they want to do these things. And the reality is they're bombarded with the same misinformation as us as a general public.
Right.
So not only do we have to teach them, but we have to dispel a ton of misinformation and notions about nutrition. So, and even sports nutrition is an even more of a wrinkle to it because there's a lot of other things that go into play on that. The nutrition needs of an athlete versus a regular person. So, really, the reason why I continued down that path, obviously it's important, but I really think there are four dimensions to athlete development. And one is mental, right? You got to be mentally tough. Two is the performance piece. That's the one where we as coaches live. We live in that world. We read tons of books. We talk to coaches. We go to conferences specifically about those types of things. We live and breathe the performance side. From agility, speed, conditioning, the weight training, all that stuff. And the reality is really the mental piece is fatigue makes cowards of us all. So if we can forge our bodies, then we can impose an indomitable will on our opponents. And there's truth to that, but I think we're really missing the mark on the mental piece. Sports psychology, I used to call it sports ambiguity. Didn't really understand it, so if I didn't understand it, I'll make fun of it. Which is what we always do, right? But come to really understand that, and I'm going to go off script here a little bit with the nutrition, but I think a great resource is Dr. Seligman's Learned Optimism. And he talks about there are really three dimensions within the cognitive dimension of people. There's the permanence, which really determines how long a person gives up. You know, how long does that stay with that person? There's a perseverance, determines how long failure affects that person in their life. And then there's a personalization with it. It determines how a person feels about themselves, just how they feel, reserve themselves and see themselves within a team, within they see themselves within their family, really just within the world. And so I think if we fail to understand how an athlete's psychological response to success and failures, it kind of leaves us ill-equipped to assist through a course of a nutrition program and even coaching. So if I know how an athlete is going to respond, if they're already hard on themselves, what good is it for me to raise my voice or even get on that athlete maybe in front of the group? Maybe I need to take a time out, and when that session's over, maybe pull that athlete in individually. It gives me an insight there. So I think, again, those four dimensions, mental, performance, but the one, two dimensions that I think are really aren't addressed to the degree we do the performance piece is nutrition and rest and recovery.
Right.
I think with the NCAA, and especially basketball, these athletes are asked to do more and more and more and more year-round. I remember when I 11 years ago when I started just doing basketball exclusively, you know, it was a lot like football. You had them in the summer, and you gave the team to the coach in August, and it was yours.
Right.
Now, basketball is a year-round sport, and so a lot of that's kind of taken away. So we keep asking athletes to do more and more and more at the expense of rest and recovery, which is, as I tell my athletes in nutrition, you're not getting stronger in the weight room, you're getting weaker. You're not getting stronger on the court, you're getting weaker. It's when you leave, and the foods that you put back in your body will determine that training adaptation, that'll complement that training adaptation. Right. That will make you that bigger, faster, stronger athlete that you aspire to be. That's why you came in here, that's why you train. And can you get from point A to point B? Absolutely. But we're in the business of making people better than they think they can possibly be.
Right.
And so maximizing that God-given potential and giving them the tools to do that. So nutrition really, when I really start looking at it, the dimensions of an athlete development, really nutrition and rest and recovery are left to, up to the athlete. We don't really address it to the degree we do performance-wise. So I try to balance all of that. And that's a tough task, but I love it all. So right. it's a passion that people are like, geez Louise, you do all that other stuff? I'm like, yeah, but I love it. It doesn't seem like work to me. I'm trying to build super machines here, right? You know, I like to say that I'm a mechanic. My athletes are my high-performance sports cars. The weight room is my garage, and the court is my test track. So, you know, a sports car and a human body are two highly complex machines, and they need constant evaluation to maximize performance and minimize mechanical failure. And so that's kind of my approach. I mean, you wouldn't put a car in a garage and pull it out the day of the race if you're sitting there for a couple of weeks and turn the key and expect that thing to run at peak performance and much less win. And so I try to take that same approach with my athletes. I say, hey, listen, are you a dump truck or are you a Ferrari? And every time, coach, I'm a Ferrari. So guess what? I think you're a Ferrari too. And that's why you're here today. And so I think you need to, you know, I tell my kids, I said, you have to treat your body like a high-performance sports car.
Right.
You know, you need constant evaluation, constant nourishment in order to maximize peak performance. Doesn't guarantee a win, but I can guarantee if you don't do it, you're not going to put yourself in a position to be successful.
Absolutely. Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And that's you said it was learned optimization?
Yeah, learned optimism, and that's Dr. Seligman. He actually was at Penn State, since retired, kind of turned Freud stuff on its ear. But they actually did some stuff with incoming freshmen at Penn State and looked, and this was part of their entrance exam,
right.
their orientation, if you will. And they identified kids coming into Penn State that were pessimistic, who didn't have a real high opinion of themselves, and immediately – they were able to put those kids in programs. And that's a nice thing about him is he teaches you how to teach your athletes, how to teach a person, how to teach kids, how to take a more optimistic and more healthy approach to, you know, yourself in the world, your perception, your personalization, your perseverance, your permanence within yourself. So pretty unique stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that one out. I haven't read that one. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think, you know, one of the biggest things that you can do, and I do this, I mean, I'm doing this right now with our guys on you know, what's a champion? You know, I mean, you know, we talk about it all the time. We talk about winning championships all the time, but like, what is it really? And when I ask that question, it's crickets. You know, it's there's nothing. It's like, well, how are we going to become champions if we're not asking, if we're not clearly defining what that is? And so I think the same is with nutrition. It's, you know, you want a good exercise. Go ask your athletes what a good plate looks like. You know, and it's crickets. It's, you know, it's they don't know. Yeah. And so what I found using NutriCareen, which I thought was fantastic, is you know, athletes are, you know, they're competitive and they're driven, and you know, when armed with a little bit of information, they're hungry for it. You
sure.
know? And so when you start working through the steps of really finding and teaching what basal metabolic rate is, and you know, and figuring out what your caloric expenditure is and things along those lines, and really, you know, kind of putting it in terms that they understand, then it's you know, they're going to be the ones that are going to be in the lunchroom saying, hey, you know, do you know what your BMR is? Because they want to one-up somebody. And so I sure. you know, that's what I found. What, you know, they really, when you take time and you educate and they understand the why, then all of a sudden it becomes a different approach. And so I think I would encourage everybody to check that out. But we both just got back from San Antonio, and I got a chance to watch your presentation. I got a chance to check out the dynamic warm-up movement assessment product that you got coming out, or has just come out now, right? It's already out.
Yeah, it just came out. I actually developed it back in about 6 years ago and shared it with some coaches, and they were like, man, this thing's awesome. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, so you know, I started sharing it with more and more.
I think it's, you know, and I think what a lot of coaches, and I've asked this question before, kind of, you know, where do you, if you don't do a FMS or something like that, then where are you really assessing your athletes? And 9 out of 10 coaches will say, well, I just watched the warm up, you know, and that tells me everything that I need to know. And so,
right.
You know, this was great because I think that you took some protocols, maybe influenced from some of these outside sources, and really created a kind of a plan with your warm up to kind of assess. And so tell us a little bit of, I mean, the presentation was great. Tell us a little bit about what, you know, what is the dynamic warm up movement assessment?
Sure. Well, I think you touched on it already. You know, the one thing is if every coach is already doing a dynamic warm up, and I tell coaches or I ask coaches, are you doing a movement screen? They say yes or no. It was interesting. We did some live polling in the presentation. The people that are doing movement assessment don't have time, and people who aren't doing it don't have time.
Right.
So I thought that was very interesting, right? So the reality is time is the most precious commodity. I always say I don't need a bigger weight room, and I don't need more weights. I need more time.
Right.
So I think that – the reason why I developed it is I was originally an FMS guy. So I thought, you know, I obviously see the need for it. The problem that I always ran into, it was a pretty arduous process. I feel like everything else had to kind of take a backseat to it when we were actually starting that process of, all right, this is FMS testing week.
Right.
So, you know, maybe that took a backseat to the strength training, so we weren't doing some stuff there. So I try to kind of fit it into a deloading week. But it became a kind of a process. It was individual. And I wanted to kind of see what happened between them. You know, how is this athlete moving? I do it once every 4 or 6 weeks. I think the average at the conference we did the live polling was once a semester.
Right.
So that's a long time. You know, what if you're not doing something right, or if the athlete isn't up there? You know, you test them and you retest them, and there's no change.
Sure.
You're like, well, crap, you know, I missed a huge opportunity. So I wanted more of an iteration, either weekly, and more importantly, you can actually do it daily. I mean, we were doing a warm-up every single day, mm-hmm. right, especially being in season. And it gives me kind of an iteration of exactly where that athlete's at, a snapshot, if you will. I mean, talk about the big talk now, it's auto-regulation with strength training. Why can't I do an auto-regulation with mobility?
Sure.
Where are you at that particular day? Maybe based on minutes played or the workload in practice, things are going to be tighter, things are going to be stiffer as a result of that. So in that particular instance, we can take a snapshot. So in that warm-up, that dynamic warm-up, I have specific unique movements that I look at. I look at really a joint segments, and what I call them are kinetic chain segments, because from the ground up, and the foot needs to be stable, the ankle needs to be mobile, knee needs to be stable, hip needs to be mobile, core stable, T-spine mobile, and you have this stability-mobility continuum. And that happens in sports all around. If, you know, if I'm in, on a football field, or even if I'm getting ready to get hit set with a screen, you know, I'm going to absorb that energy. So I'm going to be stable and strong. Whereas if I'm trying to get away from a defender or avoid a tackle, then I'm going to be using mobility to create that. So you kind of have this mobility stability continuum that's constantly going on in order to maximize that performance, that human machine. I think you have to address all those at all times. And so let's take the hips, for example. That's traditionally supposed to be a mobile area. I can tell you right now, when my freshmen come in, that is not.
Right.
In fact, I always joke with them. I say, how do you use the restroom? You using a handicap stall? You're like blowing yourself down with a boom. Like you can't even get in a squat position. So, and basketball players are the worst at that, right? So, if that joint's immobile at the hips, well, I've got that wedge between two stable spots, right? The knee and the trunk there. Efficiency is going to be compromised, and performance is going to be compromised. And then obviously a susceptibility to maybe a non-contact related injury, but more chronic or more acute, just aches and pains as a result of it. So, and I think one of the things that we do is really address from the knee down in the DWMA, which is really the foot and the ankle. We've kind of refined that in such a way that, you know, if the hips are tight, chances are the feet are messed up. Something's not going on down there right. You know, I'll use my sports car analogy. You know, if you could have a straight line V8, you know, that thing souped up 500 horsepower, the whole deal, have high octane fuel, let the air out of the tires and see how well that thing runs.
Right.
You know, so, and I kind of equate that to the feet. If the feet structurally aren't set, the ankle mobility isn't there, you're just going to wreak havoc up that kinetic chain. And athletes are great. That's what they are. So they're going to compensate those movements in order to attribute that. So with the warm-up, we just look at key segments. And we don't sort out at a 1-2-3 or a pass-fail. It's just your coach. Use your coach's eye to be able to look at that and say, you know what? That doesn't look right. And again, instead of doing it individually, just look at it globally. Have the guys doing, I think one of the things we put out on the latest one was a quad table reach. Just looking how that athlete's able to stabilize. Are they hopping around, or are they actually be able to stable, keep their hips square? What kind of extensibility do they have in the quads? Are they able to get into a flat table position? It's stuff that people have already been doing. But like you said, we just said, hey, listen, look at these particular segments. See if they're working. If they're not, if there's some sort of a movement deficiency that you notice, just mark that, and then you can, if you have time, you can do that individually with the athlete, or if you notice it globally with the team, just address it with the team entirely. And that's the other piece is, okay, let's do a movement screen. How the heck do I apply movement corrective exercises? And really, I want to emphasize movement corrective exercises. They're exercises. You need to coach up the correctives with the same intent as you do your squat.
Right.
And if you're not, I see, you know, it's kind of like, you know, we just do a check off with that. Well, I did a movement screen, now I give them these correctives, and I don't, you have to be a technician with that, because those little nuances are going to make all the difference in the world with that athlete. And let's be honest, if you take the time to do that, the athletes, that resonates with them. If you're just haphazardly going through it, the athlete's going to say, well, hell, this probably isn't that important, and I really buy into this.
Right.
And so I hear that a lot. It says, well, movement screens and that kind of stuff, they don't really work, or they're not necessary. Whatever your dogma, whatever you believe, I think you have to assess at some point. Some people assess with a squat. I think that's just one joint segment that you're looking at. There's multiple in there, but there's not a whole lot of T-spine stuff that you can look at. There's all sorts of stuff. So I'm rambling. I can talk about this a lot, but that's essentially the program.
So, you know, just so everybody has a kind of a clear picture, give me a sample of a dynamic warm-up that you're using as an assessment.
So let's just do, I think probably a universal one is, let's do inchworm. You know, I think where you walk yourself, your athlete walks their body out to plank position. I actually do into a hyperextension where they're arched up. I just want to see thoracic extension. I want to see abdominal extension. I want to see if they actually get up into that position. And then if you wanted to, you could even do a push-up in there. And doing that push-up, we're looking at core stability. We're looking at shoulder stability. And then being able to walk the feet up to the hands. A lot of athletes get up there, and instead of being folded in half, they look like a V. Their feet can't get up to their hands. So there's hamstring extensibility right there to be able to see that. Just those kind of simple things.
So how would you grade that then?
I would look at that and say, so if the athlete wasn't able to come down into an inchworm and do a push-up, I would say we need to work on core stability, core strength. If they can't walk their feet up to their hands or at least their fingertips are on the floor, we got to work on hamstring extensibility. We got to work on hamstring mobility. If they go down into that upward dog and then that hyperextension there and they get pain in the lower back, that's a red flag. I mean, I'm referring them right to the athletic trainer.
Right.
And the same thing with the quad table extension is, you know, you're literally standing on one leg, you have an opposite hand, opposite foot, and you're out into a plank flat position. How well is you able to hip hinge at that point? So you're looking at not only just a movement, but you're also looking at the agonist antagonistic movement of that. You're looking at hip flexion, hip extension, quad extension. And so a lot of times when the athletes get in that position, their knees are pointed down. They're not able to get out into that flat table position. I don't feel like I need to stand up and demonstrate this. again, and it's just looking at that saying, oh, well, that athlete can't get in that position. One of the other things we do is a downward dog, heel raise. And in that downward dog position, if anybody knows yoga, you know, you have to press and extend your arms all the way out and get into this straight line for your hands and your hips are on a straight line. If my athlete can't get into that full extension position, I already know right there, why am I even going to start him on an overhead squat program? He's not going to be able to hold the bar overhead. There's a T-spine mobility, there's a flexibility issue there. And then how well their calves are moving as they go down at that. They're able to press their heels to the ground. Probably some soleus problems. So if I compound T-spine with soleus, lack of soleus extension, guess what? There's a lot of things going on in the connect chain that need to be addressed there before we start doing compound multi-joint movement like the Olympic lifts and that kind of stuff.
Now you're using
hopefully that helps out.
Are you using
out.
A scoring system like FMS 0-3 or
no? I don't do a scoring system. It's just you just look at it and it's a check mark. That athlete needs to work on that. Doesn't look right.
Right.
Instead of assessing why, as soon as it does look right. And then I go back and I apply corrective exercises, which we actually have with the program as well. That's a big thing, too, with folks, is they say, all right, doesn't look right. How to fix it?
Right.
But we have a whole series of corrective exercises that I have found to be really, really beneficial. And how do you implement those?
Right.
And so we do those within the program. You know, we do that, you know, athlete A, B, or C. A, squatting, B, spotting, and C is doing the corrective.
Yep.
And when A's done, A rotates to the corrective, B steps up and excuse me, squats, and C steps up and is now a spotter. And we keep that again. There's my car now. I say we're a NASCAR pit crew, man.
Yep.
You know we are turning it and burning it. We want to move it. We want to be a finely oiled machine, and we want to be able to get that done. So that's a kind of a way for me to be able to add that in there. And then we talk about some static versus dynamic. We have a lot of research that we put in terms of why we do that, static reserve for afterwards, dynamic during. And then I lost my train of thought. Sorry about that, Coach.
That's kind of the rotation. You're talking about the rotation of the athletes.
Yeah, the rotation of the athletes there. And I literally have totally spaced out
that's
on that.
Okay.
So wrap that up. Edit that out.
I think the big thing is you know, how do you address when a coach comes and says, you know, that doesn't look right, but, you know, why not just throw all the correctives into the workouts? And so that way we know that we're hitting all the different, you know, corrective exercises and joint actions and things like that.
Sure.
And they are what they are. You know what I mean? They're going to get better at it. Obviously, you know, nobody just kind of casually throws a warm-up together. It's put together in a, you know, with some thought anyways. What I liked about the product, and I thought that the warm up exercises were creative. I thought they were identifiable, you know, and so like you could really quickly show with T spine rotation, you know, when you're doing the world's greatest lunge or whatever, you're doing T spine rotation.
Right.
You see right away whether or not they have thoracic mobility or not.
Correct.
What would you say to the coaches that are what would you say to the coaches that would say, we're throwing all the correctives in anyways. Why even worry about that part?
Well, and you brought me back to the point I had forgotten. I think there's a kind of a spray and pray approach a lot to the correctives. And I think again, you have to take a really focused approach and a methodical approach with that, just as you would your periodization of your strength program. And with that being the fact that anytime we increase mobility, we must increase stability. We must improve strength in that. How many times have you see an athlete, you may be working on them, they're improving their flexibility, their mobility, but they go out on the court and they're still playing at like they're stiff as a board. And then more importantly, teaching that athlete that, using that newfound ability. But more importantly, if I increase mobility and I don't increase strength in that, there's a higher susceptibility for injury. And I'm not really taking that newfound mobility and being able to apply it to that sports-specific situation with that athlete. So, the problem was I used to, at the very beginning, and it's funny you said that with coaches, we would do all of our correctives at first. The problem I had with that is I had the head coach coming in going, what the hell are we doing?
Right.
You know, nobody's moving, nobody's really sweating, you know, right? And I'm like, and I felt like every time we started to work out, the head coach was pissed. And he's like, we're not doing anything, we're wasting time.
Right.
So that kind of got me thinking of adding it into the workout. So you got movement in the room. The coach thinks he's happy. So I hear that a lot from coaches and saying, you know, well, we don't have time to do it before or after. Well, do you have time doing it during? You're telling me you're going from one exercise, the next exercise, the next. There has to be a break in there, so it's kind of an active recovery.
Right.
But I think the big piece is that stability, mobility piece. If you're going to increase mobility, you have to increase stability. So I think a lot of coaches use the Joe Ken tier system. Hey, upper body day, you're going to focus on upper body correctives.
Right.
Lower body, and then if it's total body, I like to take I leave it up to my athletes now. I wouldn't certainly do this with a novice group, but my athletes understand now. On that total body day, tell me what feels tight, and you pick it. You get to choose. Here's a list of exercises. You know what they are. There's upper and lower that you knock that out, and you can get to that point when you kind of develop that culture. But
that's good.
No,
I thought, you know, again, like I said, going through it and checking it out, I thought it was very creative, and it's it's a fantastic way to think about your own warm up, you know, dynamic warm up, and just making it, you know, either find ways to think about it in terms of, like we use, for example, with our warm up, I talk to our coaches about using the PAL paradigm, you know, the posture, arm action, leg action, and we're constantly coaching those cues. But if we're also being able to identify a muscular imbalance or a weakness or a lack of mobility or stability, great. You know, now we're able to give that much more information back to our athletes. And so I really appreciated you putting that out because, I took away a ton. I know you're busy, man. You're in a hotel there, you know, so we want to wrap the show up. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you've ever received.
I think I already shared it with you. Athletes don't care what you know. They want to know that you care.
Absolutely.
And that is the one thing that I've learned probably the most along the way. If you do that, those kids will follow you and do whatever you want them to do. And then treat everybody fairly. And that sounds so simple, right? But you can have some superstars on your team. And to be honest with you, sometimes the coaches make that fleeting mistake, right? Probably one of the biggest compliments I've gotten through the years is even right down to my walk-on, say, Coach, I appreciate how hard you coach me. Coached me just as hard. And more importantly, I appreciate how hard you coached our superstars. Because it didn't matter. And I think that in itself just lends a tremendous amount of credibility when you're trying to build a culture within your weight room and kids enjoying coming in there. Because, again, basketball, that sport in general, it's a year-round sport, man. Yep. These kids got to – you got to be creative, and more importantly, you got to have a lot of buy-in to have kids there 365 days a year, really 48 weeks out of the year. So
no question. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
A book, app, and website recommendation. Well, the one I think I shared with you at the conference is called Made to Stick.
Yep.
It's a great book. It obviously has a business tone to it, but I think it's really good in terms of you trying to convey your message to that athlete and having that buy-in and saying things the way maybe we have all this knowledge, right? We need to be able to take things and put it in a context where our group doesn't have that knowledge. Again, it's kind of the same paradigm with the Nutri-Carina. It was, you know, use your don't take your super knowledge and apply. Just take those nutrition principles. Same thing with the coaching. Use visual or auditory cues and that kind of stuff. So that's a good book, a great app. I think a really good app that we've been using is, and it falls in line with our coaching development, is Sleep Cycle.
Okay.
It's a nice thing is all our kids have cell phones now, and they got this thing strapped to their head. And and so being able to, the app allows you to be able to measure sleep quantity and sleep quality. So when they go to sleep at night, they put their phone on the bed, they turn on the app, and it measures sound and movement, and it gives them a sleep quality. And you can actually export that database out. The kids can actually email that to you. So every Friday, our kids send that to me, and I can actually look at that. And again, I'm looking at that recovery piece. I should see spikes in heart rate and then recovery and resting heart rate. Right. Elevations in the baseline, elevations in baseline. If I'm seeing that, then I know our athletes are recovering based on the protocol and the stress load that we're doing. So I think that's a fantastic app, and it's a really easy way to have a biometric alarm and not break the pocketbook. I think it's like 99 cents for a year subscription. So I think we can all afford that one.
Website.
What was the other one?
Website.
Gosh.
It's one that you check out regularly. It doesn't have to be a strength one.
Boy, you got me stumped on that one. There's all kinds of...
Well, Nutri-Carina is one. We'll put that up there for sure.
Oh, yeah, Nutri-Carina, you got to go with that dynamic warm-up. I'm trying not to self-promote on that, right?
We'll put those up for sure.
I think a good one is a don't eat this, eat that. That's a great one. Actually, we have in our weight room, we have an Apple TV hooked up to a big screen. And so just getting the kids to think about nutrition, when they first come in, obviously my kids get there a little bit early. I set out the iPad and I pull up that, and I can actually shoot that up, AirPlay, right, to the TV. Yeah. And kids can actually score themselves. They take like 5 series questions. It gives them feedback. Sometimes my guys will get in there and I'll have 2 groups. You know, they got that competitiveness knowing, so they'll go here. And again, it's just a quick iteration of nutrition to kind of keep that going. So it's pretty neat. You know, you get in there and you're like, oh, I think I would choose this particular meal. And you click on it, you're like, holy crap, I had no idea that was not good versus this other one. And and it's interesting. I mean, the average person eats out 5.8 times a week. So it just gives them an opportunity to be able to learn that and reinforce the nutrition piece of them.
Oh, that's great, man. Well, buddy, as somebody that puts content out there and things like that, I mean, one of the things that I recommend that I appreciate the most is when people, through their learning experiences, find solutions and then put it out there to the world to share, you know, and you've totally done that and continue to do that by speaking, by putting these things out, things on those lines. And, I'm very appreciative of that. So thanks a lot, buddy.
Thank you, Coach. I really appreciate your time, man. Thanks a lot.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.